On today's podcast, we have four-time best-selling author, integrative dietitian, and high-performance coach, Esther Blum. She beat mercury and mold toxicity, battled Epstein-Barr virus, and debilitating insomnia. Her training and expertise have enabled her to coach people to eliminate the need for medication, optimize gut health, balance their hormones, and reverse chronic illness. She has helped thousands of women identify and fix the root cause of their health issues and balance their hormones once and for all. On today's episode, we'll be talking about gut health, balancing your hormones, and being your own health advocate. Enjoy. Welcome to the Kat Kativi Podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Hi, Esther. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Hey, Kat. Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are now helping women with their health and nutrition.
I grew up in a family of physicians, so I was surrounded by my grandfather, who was an ENT surgeon, and my father, and who was a dermatologist. My mother was a nurse. My grandmother was an anesthesiologist. So I was really surrounded by health and wellness and really giving back to the community and people doing house calls. So a really old-fashioned medical family, and science came very naturally to me. And when it came time for me in college to declare a major, I didn't want to go to medical school. I didn't want to be a doctor, but I loved the science requirements of nutrition, which is basically a pre-med degree minus the physics and just a little less chemistry. So it was really a great fit for me. And the first 5 years of my career were spent working in hospitals and having about 10 minutes to give someone diet instruction before they were discharged from the hospital. So I really wanted to shift my focus to something much more preventative and get into people early on in their age so that their aging process could really be optimized. So I went and became credentialed in functional medicine and really haven't looked back and have had a beautiful private practice. And I'm working on my fifth book to really teach people what they need to heal, how to navigate through in the medical system, how to listen, use the wisdom of their body to pursue the best treatments for them, which is often a combination of testing, supplements, diet, lifestyle, not necessarily in that order, and really treating the whole person.
So you are an integrative dietitian. Can you explain how that's different from maybe a traditional Western approach?
So I have a bachelor's and a master's in clinical nutrition. And when you're studying to become a clinical dietitian, you're given a more traditional, which I feel is an antiquated education. You're really taught the most basic of basics. When I was in school, I mean, to date myself a little bit, like the low-fat diet was a thing. Then it was Dean Ornish, which is like super high carb, super low fat diet, which no human should or can sustain for long periods of time. You were taught you don't need supplements. You can get all your nutrients from food. And you weren't really taught the healing diets. You were taught everything in moderation. But even to this day, I get many different medical journals and I get Today's Dietitian, which advocates that you don't have to go gluten-free to feel better, that canola and soybean oil are good for you, everything in moderation, versus my functional medicine journals, which talk about the healing powers of turmeric for inflammation, that it's 1,000 times better than any traditional painkiller you get on the market and really goes into therapeutic diet. So that's what my functional medicine training it was all the studies. I was so pissed when I did that training. I was like, where were these studies in my 6 years of undergraduate and graduate? Why do I have these enormous student loans and learn none of these things? where I literally took a course in grad school called Vitamins and Minerals. And the professor said, you don't need any supplements. Everything you need is from your diet. Versus my functional medicine training, where you learn about how to treat autoimmune conditions through a paleo diet. You learn about the benefits of fasting. You learn about, back in the day, it was called the specific carbohydrate diet, which was started by Elaine Gottschall. Now it's more evolved into the FODMAP diet. But you learn how to treat really chronic medical conditions with diet, with supplements. And you also, now at this point, I do extensive testing in my practice. I do gut testing. I do extensive hormone testing. I look at neurotransmitters in the brain, and I do far more extensive blood testing as well. So much so that a lot of doctors say, I'm not going to do these tests. And I have to call the office and say, no, this is why this human needs these tests from you. So it's a very different approach, but it works much more in depth, and it's a permanent solution to your problems versus every day. Just this morning, my calendar was filled with people wanting to book calls with me, and at least four, let's say I got 10 just this morning, at least four of them say, my doctor doesn't listen to anything I say. My doctor doesn't believe me. My doctor won't do anything about my medical condition. So the average person who comes to me has been to 5 to 10 doctors before me, or just been gaslit and told diet doesn't matter, or, oh, your stomach hurts, you have irritable bowel syndrome, or you don't need hormones, even though you're hot flashing and have severe insomnia at night and have vaginal dryness and no libido. So you're not, the traditional medical model is treating symptoms. It's treating single organ systems, not connecting the whole puzzle, the whole person. And it's treating with drugs, which drugs have time and place. Listen, we've all benefited from modern medicine. God bless surgeons who can like really surgically fix things that are broken, like bones and things like that. But when it comes to long-term prevention, when it comes to root causes, and when it comes to taking the whole person into account, that is where functional medicine really fills the gap quite beautifully. And I see people who have severe stomach pain all the time, and we'll explore their history of sexual abuse, and lo and behold, they have horrible trauma and sexual abuse. And we work on, you know, of course, I work with psychologists who deal with trauma work and refer out to that. But a regular doctor might not delve in deep. They might not understand the connection with trauma and illness. Hashimoto's is another autoimmune condition often expressed after a traumatic event, a divorce, abuse, a death. So, you know, you have to have a lot of listening skills to put the pieces together. You have to know which test to run or which direction you take. Not everyone needs diet therapy if you haven't dealt with your trauma first. Deal with the trauma first, because no amount of diet or supplements will fix that. You have to. But again, so I love putting the pieces together. I love learning who my clients are as humans and being able to tailor and address a whole plan for their needs, not just diet, not just supplements, but the whole person.
Yeah, I remember a while back, they had gotten rid of, in Florida, nutritionists. Like, you can't be a nutritionist anymore. You have to be a registered dietitian. Mm-hmm. So I had looked into that, and I actually went to the school, talked to the professors. What do you teach? How does it work? And they had classes on making artificial ingredients more addictive, taste better. This is what they're teaching people for diet. It just blew my mind. And I was just like, how is this allowed? So obviously I did not want anything to do with that. And unfortunately in Florida, you have to be a dietitian if you want to do any sort of nutrition advice, even to be a functional nutritionist. So it was just not something I wanted to waste my time on. But yeah, I see that a lot. Like, I've had a lot of nutritionists on, and the good ones, they always do additional training in functional medicine, all of them. They're always like, that's just what I needed to be licensed. The rest I had to do on my own.
Mm-hmm. It's a real labor of love, but I'm so passionate about it because our medical system is leaving people in horrible shape without answers, very frustrated, and again, gaslit. And our bodies are wise beyond measure and tell us everything we need to know. So when we're having clear symptoms, it's not in our heads. This isn't some manufactured story. This is something that's really happening in your body. So the goal is to find someone who's going to listen to you, who's going to unearth what's happening, and who's going to give you a strategic plan that works, where you see results and you see the shift. And it's profound when you have someone. I've had plenty of patients who couldn't get out of bed, couldn't walk up the steps, due to severe pain and arthritis and autoimmune conditions, and were on heavy medications like methotrexate and steroids. And then their doctor, they were on Plaquenil and steroids, and their doctor wanted to put them on methotrexate. And then we worked together. They lose 20 pounds, they're able to literally run up the step. They don't have to take 3 doses of Advil a day. They never go on methotrexate. Just everything functions better. Or I have another client who did beautifully. She couldn't eat more than 6 foods when she came to me. It was like boiled chicken, canned peaches, a banana, maybe some rice, but she couldn't even touch veggies at all. And again, like, no diagnosis at all. Went to a rheumatologist, was told she had a connective tissue disorder, but they couldn't isolate what it was. She was put on steroids. She blew up to 180 pounds. And this was a petite girl and just was absolutely devastated. And she also had severe digestive struggles where she was nervous to leave the house because all hell broke loose. So again, we did testing. We looked at her gut health. We got the inflammation down. We cleaned up her autoimmune markers. We put on a very special diet, and very slowly, it took 6 to 12 months, but very slowly we were able to increase her food. She lost a good 30 pounds. This was during the pandemic when she was home alone doing like exercise. She was doing Dancing with the Stars videos and she was able to expand her palate, and we did really good detective work. We realized like the chicken breast she was having actually had gluten in it. So you think, oh, I'll buy a chicken breast, it's benign. But the way it was processed, it was either in contact with something that had gluten, or the way the animal was fed, or somehow in the processing it had gluten in it. So we were really able to isolate all that. And she got so much better so quickly, which was, well, not quickly, but in the span of a lifetime, 6 to 12 months is short. So she did beautifully. So it's all, there's nothing in most people that's not treatable or reversible. You just have to find the right practitioner to unlock it.
So what do you find are the biggest health problems that you get with women in your practice?
Primarily, the women who treat me are going through a hormonal storm, either perimenopause or menopause. And I treat people even in their 60s and 70s who are still having menopausal symptoms. They're still having hot flashes. And we eliminate them and we get them sleeping again and we clear up their brain fog. I really help women through the whole thing. And I'm writing my 5th book on menopause for this very reason, because the majority of medical testing is done on men. The majority of drugs tested are on men. They're not on women. I always say if this was a male issue, we'd have a million treatments for it. But because it's a female issue, women are so underserved. Women of color are severely underserved, not listened to, and your symptoms are real. This is a great story. I was talking to a prospective client the other day, and she said that her doctor wanted to give her an IUD to get through her menopause, which birth control, you don't really need birth control in perimenopause and menopause because you're not really ovulating anyway. So you don't need something that's going to further suppress your progesterone, which is a rock star through your menopausal journey. So her doctor wanted to put her on IUD, and the doctor herself admitted that she was having severe insomnia and took Benadryl every night to sleep. So it really shows us like our poor doctors aren't even trained to be equipped to handle all of this. So there's a viable need out there.
I was just talking to my gynecologist the other day, and she was like, how come you don't have a primary doctor? And I'm like, every time I go to one, I walk in, I look at them, and I'm like, this person cannot help me. They look ill. They look like they barely can help themselves.
Yeah. Yes, that's true too. Yes. And you see it too. A lot of my mom was a nurse, and a lot of the nurses were really obese and not taking great care of themselves. even though they're like the most amazing caregivers. And this is not to knock doctors. I honestly, there's so many amazing caregivers in this world. They go into medicine truly altruistic and wanting to help people. It's just the training is so deficient. So I did a post about this on Instagram saying, if your doctor isn't helping your symptoms or listening to you or doing the lab tests you want, go find a new doctor. And there was a nutritionist or a dietitian who's married to a doctor who got extraordinarily offended and wrote a whole email. I find this so offensive. And my husband is training so many hours. I was like, dude, I work full time. I run a full time medical practice by myself. I handle soup to nuts, the admin work, the testing, the treatment of a lot of humans. And I have a family, okay, and a dog. And guess what? I don't care how busy you are. You have time to read three or four research papers when you're sitting on the toilet in the morning. You have time to listen to a podcast when you're working out. You have time to listen to a lecture. So don't tell me you don't have the time. You have to have the desire to serve your patients. And if I was a doctor, and this is how I began serving menopausal women, I knew nothing about menopause years ago. And guess what? My patients kept saying, I'm going through menopause. I'm going through menopause. And I was like, shoot, I don't know anything about this. I better start educating myself. And I spend hours every week listening to podcasts, listening to webinars, going to trainings, and making that just a part of my day, a part of my week, a part of my life. Because if you really want to serve your people, you darn well better learn what they're asking you. If you get the same question more than three times, go learn about it. It's your duty. If you're an intelligent human, you can actually learn things pretty quickly. It doesn't take tons and tons of time. Where I've spent the most time training is, fortunately, I have many doctors at labs where I do my tests who will sit and explain the tests and the treatments so we can come up with really powerful protocols. But it does. It takes years and years to get where you are. And most of what I learn is not in books, which makes it even harder.
Yeah. So one of the problems that you touched upon in the beginning was when women go to their doctors, they have all these symptoms and their doctor says, okay, yeah, you're fine because your labs are fine. So you have to be fine. So what is going on? Why are the labs saying you're fine when you don't feel fine?
Yeah, you can still have totally normal labs and feel like complete dog poop. That means the testing's not comprehensive. Usually by the time things are picked up on a blood test, you're pretty far gone. An autoimmune condition just doesn't happen overnight. It's a storm that has been building for years. Genetics are the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger. If you're not finding things on a blood test, either your testing's not complete or you may not be far enough along in your journey, right? So thyroid issues are a great example where someone will have Hashimoto's, and I've helped a lot of people get diagnosed just by the testing I run. A traditional medical office will run a TSH, that's thyroid stimulating hormone. However, you need about six other thyroid tests, and you need to look at your antibodies, your TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies, to even see if you have Hashimoto's. You need to look at T3, T4, reverse T3. There's so many other tests that you can do, and thyroid's just one example. But let's say that someone's labs are quote unquote normal, but they're still feeling horrible, right? Labs aren't always a great measure of long-term effects. They're good for short-term effects. And some labs, you know what, to be fair, some labs are good for long-term effects. A great example of this is hemoglobin A1C. That tells me if your blood sugar has been elevated for at least overall on average for 3 months. So that is a good long-term test, but that's why I do the gut test that I do and the hormone test that I do, because it's more like time-lapse photography. When I test urine tests for cortisol, I'm taking 5 samples over the course of 16 hours. So that's going to give me a real clear picture on what your diurnal rhythm looks like, your chronic stress, you know, whether or not you're even making cortisol, your adrenals burned out, those things are long-term effects. They don't happen overnight at all.
So I want to go back to you a little bit. So I know that you struggled with Epstein-Barr virus, mold, and mercury toxicity. Yeah. So in your experience with clients, how many of them have you found with similar health issues to those? And how does one find out if that's the cause?
Yeah. It was funny. There was a long period of time when I did get a lot of people. It's just probably because I was blogging about a lot at the time. So I attracted a lot of people with Epstein-Barr, with chronic immune dysfunction. So I definitely have treated a lot of people with that. However, I'm not a mold expert. I am going through mold treatment now. I'm also going through Lyme treatment now. And for those people, I certainly refer out. That is not my zone of genius or expertise at all. So I can give diet support. I can tell you what's happening to your gut and to your hormones as a result. But often people have called me and I've said, get rid of the mold first and then we'll talk, because mold really annihilates gut bacteria. And Lyme tends to blow out your nervous system. And under both cases, your cortisol curve is going to be pretty darn flat. And that's what happened with me. I was like, I lost my ability to tolerate heavy exercise. I would lift weights and crash so hard, I would immediately go to the sofa and nap. This happened to me visiting family. We were in Florida. We were going to go out to dinner. I was like, let me get in a workout. I went to the gym, lifted, and literally I was like, I am nauseous and dizzy and feel like I can't even function, and went to the couch and fell right asleep. I knew, I was like, okay, I think I have a toxin issue at that point. But yes, some people, I've gone through a lot of things that people have gone through. I've gone through childbirth. I've gone through training through and breastfeeding. I breastfed for a year. I ran a marathon, so I certainly know all about sports and endurance training. And then dealing with chronic mystery illnesses that no one was able to diagnose until somebody was like, oh, dude, you've got Lyme. So it really, it's been a journey for sure. And I'm perimenopausal now and on partial hormone replacement. I'm not on estrogen yet, but I'm on progesterone and DHEA. So does it help me to have gone through these things personally myself? Yes, absolutely. It gives me insight and empathy. But I also don't have to go through everything my people are going through to know how to treat and heal it. That's for sure. I still have helped many people. I don't have, for example, knock wood, an autoimmune condition, but I've been treating them since I was trained in functional medicine. So as long as you have the knowledge and the research and you have other practitioners you can talk to if you ever have a question, you can treat people and know how to get well. And so much of getting well and healing is the basics. It really boils down to the basics. Chewing your food really well, digesting and absorbing your nutrients, eating really healthy, nutrient-dense foods, getting enough sleep, getting daily movement, surrounding yourself with people who inspire you, who are positive, and having healthy relationships. If you have those things lined up, you're going to treat and heal a lot of what's ailing you right then and there.
So I ask a lot of people this question, and I want to know your take. What do you think about germ theory versus the terrain theory? Your environment makes you sick, because let's say you're a plant, for example, you're not getting adequate sun, your water is polluted, and now you're weak, and then bugs can attack you more. Do you think that's more likely the case, or is it just if you come in contact with something, it'll make you sick?
That's a hard question to answer. It's not the perspective I take when I'm treating people. I really do testing, so I don't have to guess. I always joke that I'm a dietitian, not a magician. So that's why I do stool testing. So I have hard numbers to look at. That's why I do hormone testing. So I have hard numbers to look at. So the question you asked is a very intelligent one. I just think it's unknowable to really know. So I'm not sure.
If you had to just give your opinion, complete opinion, no backing, just what do you think? What would you say?
I would say I don't have an answer for you. I really, Again, I don't, anytime I assume anything about a person's well-being, I'm not usually, I'm right a percentage of the time, but I really prefer to have empirical evidence first before I guess, because that is much more of a driver in someone's treatment path and plan than just me saying, theorizing and saying, I think it could be this. I'm not sure. It could be this. I really try to reserve judgment and just look at the data first.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about the gut then. Which body processes are the gut responsible for?
Every body process. Everything. When we're talking about the gut, I'm primarily talking about small intestines, stomach through small intestines. Of course, large intestines are involved, but small intestines where the rubber really meets the road. 70% of your lymph nodes line your small intestines. So immune function, hands down, but also trauma, genetics, nutrient absorption, all of those can influence the genes that are turned on or off to express themselves for illness. So for example, we all have the genes for cancer. That doesn't mean that they're going to be expressed. If you're absorbing your nutrients correctly, if your liver's functioning well, you decrease your likelihood for cancer. If you're pooping every day, that's also extraordinarily beneficial. So and the small intestine also produces 90% of your neurotransmitters, of your serotonin and dopamine. So there is such a massive gut-brain connection. In fact, I was just learning recently a new term called the psychobiome. And it's the term coined to connect our mood and our neurotransmitter production with the certain gut bacteria. Scientists have now been able to isolate specific gut bacteria where if you're deficient, you can have more panic attacks, you can have depression, you can have anxiety, you can have ADHD. So I think that whole field is super duper exciting. But if you want, my son was teasing me this morning. He's 14. He was like, I can handle all your clients, mom. Just healthy gut is healthy brain. I was like, that's pretty much it. Because when you think about just how poor nutrient status affects your health, it's dramatic. We have an epidemic of people who are massively obese and severely undernourished at the same time. If you just clean up your diet, fix your gut, so many other pieces fall into place. Your hormone balance, inflammation, migraines, depression, anxiety, ADHD, just bowel regularity, digestive function, chronic disease, chronic illness, all of those are affected by the gut.
So what are some small steps everyone can take to improve gut health?
First of all, you want to make sure about 90% of your diet is from nutrient-dense foods. And nutrient-dense foods are the ones without labels. They don't come in plastic packages that are really bright and shiny with an ingredient list longer than your grocery list, basically. So those are proteins from meat. And yes, meat is one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. It's a great source of zinc and B12 and protein and iron. So meat, ideally grass-fed or pastured and organic. Eggs, poultry, chicken, turkey, wild game, things like venison, ostrich, buffalo, elk, rabbit, Cornish hens, harder to find in the grocery stores, but certainly available online. And then you have eggs, if you tolerate dairy is nutrient dense. And what am I leaving out here? Put fish, wild Alaskan salmon, or, you know, wild caught seafood. Then you have your root vegetables, your potatoes, your sweet potatoes, your parsnips, turnips, taro root, butternut, acorn, spaghetti, squash. You have your good quality fats, nuts, seeds, avocados, olives, and coconut. And their oils as well, olive oil, coconut oil, butter. And then you have your produce, your fruits and veggies, and those are all super nutrient dense. So and I know we are talking about small steps, but that's actually a huge step. If 90% of your diet is from real food, You're saving your own life. I love how Michael Pollan writes about the importance of cooking. He's like, if you just cook your meals at home, you're going to save your own life, because those foods are proven to fight chronic disease, to fight inflammation. And I know after 27 plus years of practice, those foods heal. They heal. People are getting radiantly and radically healthy eating those foods and able to get off medications, able to stop their heartburn medications, able to stop their anti-inflammatories, able to decrease. I've had many patients get off antidepressants with the facilitation of their psychiatrist, of course. You're changing someone's life just starting there. That is just profound to me, of how that changes someone's life. Eating fermented foods is another great way to really keep that healthy gut bacteria. So if you tolerate dairy, yogurt or kefir, but also kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, those are all beautiful fermented foods. Miso paste is a fermented food as well. So all of those are super nutritious. And then just being very careful with caffeine and booze also, especially as we age, our tolerance for both really decreases and interrupts our sleep a tremendous amount. So getting good sleep is also imperative for radiant health. And your body does the most healing between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. So I recognize not everyone's going to go to bed at 10. I usually am lights out. I start the process at 10, take off my makeup, brush teeth, read, and meditate, and lights out by 10:30. And trying to keep a consistent sleep schedule 7 days a week, you know, that your body is going to love the routine of it all. But good sleep, again, clears up brain fog, balances hormones, fixes a lot of gut inflammation and leaky gut, and just gives you a tremendous amount of energy and mental focus too.
I love how you didn't say just be vegan, which a lot of people come on and they say all your problems will be solved if you're vegan. Whereas I see a lot of vegans, even some of my close friends, that they just go to the inside aisles in the grocery store. Everything is in a box. Everything is highly processed. And they're like, there's no meat in it. I'm like, this is not food. You're just eating a bunch of chemicals.
That's right. You can be a French fry vegan, is my joke. And just, yeah, eat mac and cheese is vegan. Vodka is vegan. So what? It doesn't mean anything. And yes, and for the record, listen, I have no attachments to, if you follow a vegan diet, it's great short term. And I've actually, certainly with Epstein-Barr or severe chronic viral issues or a fatty liver, I do have people go plant-based for a couple months, but long-term, especially women, and especially when you're going through menopause, it's pretty much impossible to balance your blood sugar and your hormones without animal protein in there. Your adrenals are just absolutely conked out. So you really need it. If you're detoxing or healing from a chronic condition, you really need the protein, because without it, especially as you age, you lose a ton of muscle mass. And you cannot balance your blood sugar. And muscle is the organ of longevity. So we know that aging, the biggest cause of death in the elderly population are bone fractures. And when you have a lot of muscle and you're strong and you're maintaining your balance, it's much harder to fall. Not only that, but muscle is correlated with what's a big piece of Alzheimer's prevention too. Alzheimer's is really type 3 diabetes. So you want to make sure that you're getting a good amount of protein in your diet to support muscle, quite frankly.
Okay, so you mentioned type 3 diabetes. I've only heard of types 1 and 2. So what's
type 3 is Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's disease starts a good 20 years before the symptoms really show up, right? Things just don't happen in your body. People say, I don't understand. One day she just got cancer. No, you've actually had cancer for a long time. Those cells have been working at that a long time. It just, by the time it's diagnosed, it's often late in the game. So Alzheimer's prevention, you want to think about A, for women, estrogen replacement therapy at hormone, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is imperative. Most women get cognitive changes when estrogen levels fall and they experience brain fog, they experience memory loss, shifts in memory, and menopause happens 20 years typically before Alzheimer's symptoms start showing up. So hormone replacement is extraordinarily beneficial, as is a really clean diet, a healthy diet, protein-rich, nutrient-dense diet, low in sugar. So yeah, Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes where the sugar is glycating in the brain and really causing the cells to be a bit sticky and inflexible. So Mark Hyman actually talks a lot about it. He does a wonderful job at it.
So do you think that women who have maybe estrogen dominance would be a little bit more protected, or it doesn't matter, as soon as you go through menopause, it's going to crash?
Correct. However, you need to make sure that if you do bioidentical hormone replacement, this is again why I do extensive hormone testing in blood and urine, because I want to make sure your detox pathways are proper so that you're not estrogen dominant. If you're doing hormone replacement therapy, you want to make sure you're not becoming imbalanced in your hormone state. But yes, once you go through menopause, your ovaries are producing estrogen and progesterone pre-menopause, perimenopause, and then after menopause, your adrenals kick in and sputter a little bit for some last hurrahs, but it's pretty minimal production. So when the party's over, it's over, baby.
And what do you find that women who have easy, breezy menopauses have done, or what was their hormone profile like before?
That is a great question. There's no rhyme or reason to it, per se. Individually, as a population, I can tell you people who are more physically active, metabolically lean, have more muscle tissue, are typically going to stay leaner and not gain what feels like 20 pounds overnight, for sure. And also having a healthy gut is imperative. The better your gut health is going into menopause, the better it will be on the other side of it. Because when you go through menopause, you have a lot of changes to the lining of your gut. As your estrogen and progesterone decline, the mucous membrane that lines your small intestine really decreases. Your gut becomes, the gut wall becomes more semi-permeable. You develop a leaky gut and bloating, and again, brain fog and fatigue. Food sensitivities to gluten and dairy are big ones. If your gut wall has really strong integrity going in, you've got a much better fighting chance. And you also detox estrogen much better when you're pooping regularly, when you really have good gut and liver function, for sure.
For a lot of women, I noticed that poor gut health seems to always go with hormonal imbalance. So why do you think the hormones are imbalanced in the first place? Do you think it could be more genetic, environmental, diet related?
So first of all, you want to look at how your body's interfacing with the environment. There are millions and millions of women on all sorts of birth control, okay? Birth control suppresses ovulation. It suppresses hormone production. So let's say you're a woman who had a regular period, super painful periods, you have PCOS, endometriosis. Your doctor says, take the birth control pill. It's really not the proper treatment for those conditions, because you're just suppressing your body's own production of estrogen, of progesterone. And for some women, they came back no problem. Like some women can be on the pill from ages 16 to 27. They go off the pill, boom, the next month they're pregnant. We all know someone like that. But a lot of women really struggle to get pregnant, and then they have to go on IVF, and then their periods don't really regulate from there on. And I have to put people on hormones even before they're perimenopausal, just on a lot of herbs and fix the adrenals and the gut just to bring the regular cycles back. So I'm sorry, what was the first part of your question? I'm not answering all of it. What's the cause of hormone imbalances to begin with? Okay, chronic stress is a huge one, especially for progesterone. Chronic adrenal stress really tanks your progesterone production, and you need a robust production of progesterone every month to even ovulate. So chronic stress. Now, what does chronic stress look like? Chronic stress looks like being on your iPad in bed till the minute you get to sleep. I just saw a research study this week that showed it was in rats, but the implications for human were very strong, where the exposure to the electromagnetic frequencies coming from Wi-Fi and 5G technology, by the way, is military grade. It's not meant to be in civilians' homes next to their heads in bed. So exposure thickens the walls of the adrenal cortex. So and it raises cortisol levels, especially if you're someone who sleeps with a phone next to your head. Cortisol levels are elevated while you sleep. That is putting your body into chronic stress. You're working all the time. You're not quieting your mind down. You're not meditating. You're not spending time outdoors in nature. You have a stressful job on someone else's deadline, or you're parenting full time and just don't have a lot of help or support. All of those are big drivers of hormone imbalances. And then yes, too much caffeine and booze, not enough good quality protein and fat. And we, oh my gosh, we as women need fat, especially if you're trying to get good quality eggs for fertility, or if you have PCOS, the right fats will help. Fats are precursors, and cholesterol in particular is a precursor to hormones. Fats make estrogen, they make progesterone, they make testosterone. So the right fats are imperative. Olive oil, avocados, butter, nuts and seeds, olives, which olives are a prebiotic food too, by the way. So caviar, fatty fish, you know, oils, those are really nutritious. What is very poor in nutrients and will really upset your delicate hormone balance are the processed fats. Things like canola, even if it's organic, guys, soybean oil, cottonseed oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, anything hydrogenated, those are all very toxic and will displace healthy fats. Omega-3s from cold water fatty fish, that's another good fat for you. So you want to make sure you've got the right fatty acid balance and getting enough good protein. That will also help support hormonal balance too. But if you're following a really low fat diet, your hormones are, and your PMS is going to be really pretty wicked for sure.
Yeah. I had someone come on the podcast to talk about EMFs, and there are some things to do, thankfully, like he suggested, having a kill switch for your bedroom installed so that you could turn it off at night. So at least your bedroom doesn't have any electronics going.
That's right. The bedroom is for sleeping and sex. That's it. No Wi-Fi, no phones. If you have to, because I always get this question, if you have to have it on, let's say you have a teenager out driving, you're a caregiver for a parent or a spouse, and you have to have it on, sleep with it a minimum of 10 feet away from your head, but don't put it near your head at all.
Which tests can we get done to determine whether or not our hormones are in balance?
A couple of things. One is I do blood tests. I do comprehensive thyroid panels. I look at vitamin D. I look at fasting insulin and glucose. I'll also look at red blood cell magnesium and zinc. I'll do a comprehensive CBC. I'll look at folate and B12. So those are just foundations you need. Then I'll also look at inflammatory markers, lipoprotein A, C-reactive protein. Those are very telling in and of themselves, and I'll look for ANA and autoimmune markers. But then going deeper and delving deeper, I do a Dutch test complete, and this tells me your body's production and detoxification of hormones. This is really important because, again, it enables me to see, okay, whether or not you're making decent amounts of estrogen, and if they're going down the pro-inflammatory, the 4-OH or the 16-OH pathways, which will cause you a lot of issues with estrogen dominance, things like weight gain, breast tenderness, moodiness, irritability, fluid retention, migraines potentially. So that's very telling. I will also, it enables me to look at the ratios of estrogen to progesterone and what your balance is like. And testosterone as well. Women need testosterone too. It's very important for maintaining a lean body mass. I'll also look at your DHEA levels. I look at your production of morning and metabolized cortisol, because that paints a very clear picture of what your stress is like. For example, I have some people who are literally off the charts. Either just work stress is really high, or they're drinking just tons of espresso to get through the day. That's like a classic example where I see someone's cortisol off the chart. Or I see people who are absolutely rock bomb. They start off high after their morning coffee, then they go do their Peloton, and at 3 p.m., they are just crashed and burned, irritable, weepy, exhausted, and grabbing another Starbucks to get through that second part of the day. And then I also look at, again, neurotransmitter production, and I can see if you're deficient in certain B vitamins, if you're making your serotonin and dopamine, if you're producing melatonin. So it enables me to give you a really clear picture of what's happening and give you a specific roadmap as to how to heal that. Maybe you need carbs at night. Maybe you're under eating. I have a lot of women who are working out very hard and not eating enough calories or carbs. So I often have to diet people up. And I see this in women who have done keto or super low carb for long periods of time. And their adrenals just, they're not functioning. And the thyroid is really shut down. And you need enough carbs to convert the T4 into the active form of thyroid hormone, which is T3. So I can also see if their cortisol is really bad in the afternoon, usually the thyroid is involved in there too. So I'll start with simple shifts like increasing someone's carb intake, especially at night. So they sleep really well, their thyroid is starting to upregulate again. And I'll also do some nice adaptogenic adrenal herbs like ashwagandha, passion flower. Those are holy basil, rhodiola. Those are all really restorative. And licorice can actually raise and sustain cortisol levels because it increases the half-life of cortisol. So it helps the active form of cortisol stay active for longer periods of time. So your energy is more sustained during the day. You're not crashing and you get a much better diurnal rhythm. So your energy is good during the day. And then at night you sleep beautifully. So the treatments are simple, but I also do things like tell people to get off coffee and I'll put them on an adaptogenic drink. I don't receive money from this company. I just really like it. It's called Four Sigmatic. And they have a cordyceps and cacao blend where cordyceps is a mushroom, again, that gives good mental focus and endurance, but without the caffeine, it tastes really pleasant actually, so that you get good mental function and can perform without that coffee jitteriness and without impacting your sleep at night.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of the herbs that I'm taking.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And how do you feel on them?
I feel pretty good and it's weird. But I do know years before I figured out the coffee was a no-go. So I've been off coffee for quite some time. And I notice all my friends are like, I can have coffee. It doesn't bother me. But I notice it totally bothers them. It makes them so much more irritable. They're yelling in traffic. I can see it. Not everyone wants to admit it. But unfortunately, as delicious as it is, it affects a lot of women.
Oh, it does. I don't drink coffee, but I still yell in traffic. So I don't know what my excuse is other than I think I was a race car driver in my past life. But yeah, no, but it does. And it really, the coffee really worsens PMS too. And when you're going through perimenopause and menopause, you can get these ragey days also. So it really impacts that. Yeah. So if you're staying there holding a smoking gun, you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have had that second cup of coffee.
Yes. And in Miami, everybody loves their coffee. So everyone's a little on edge here. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed that when I started switching to matcha, it actually got a lot better because matcha has a little bit less caffeine and it doesn't have the spike as much. So it's better, but I still have to make sure I drink it early so it doesn't affect my sleep.
Yeah, I found for me, matcha made me very jittery. I couldn't tolerate it at all. But yeah, I've never been a big caffeine drinker, but that, I don't know, matcha did me in too. Who knows?
I do put all my tinctures, the passion flower, ashwagandha, everything in the matcha. So that could be why it's not so bad.
Yeah, that's probably why. That makes sense.
What are some other maybe diet changes that women can do to help balance hormones and, of course, get more regular?
Mm-hmm. again, really figuring out. So my fourth book is called Cave Women Don't Get Fat. And it really is wonderful. It's a paleo diet book for women, which is extraordinarily hormone balancing because it will support your adrenals and thyroid. It's not a low carb diet by any means, but it helps you find your own unique carb tolerance. Everyone has a different carb tolerance, okay? And everyone varies the first 2 weeks of your cycle versus the last 2 weeks of your cycle. So this is a really important tip. The first 2 weeks of your cycle, you're much more insulin sensitive. You can handle some extra carbs without the weight gain. You're not really craving. You can handle harder workouts. You're more resilient. Your brain is happy. You're not irritable because your progesterone and estrogen are higher. Once your progesterone and estrogen peak mid-cycle and then start to fall, that's when it all hits the fan. And you become more insulin resistant, more irritable, more moody. There's that 2 days where you just feel like you could snort a line of chocolate chips off the counter and pretty much faceplant into a trough of ice cream or potato chips. Those weeks, you want to make sure, and those couple days in particular, you really want to double up on your protein, okay? To support your adrenals, take the edge off the cravings and the blood sugar swings that you're getting. What most people don't realize is, and women especially, you need about 4 to 6 ounces at every meal, but especially in the morning because it levels off your blood sugar for 4 to 6 hours after you eat it. So imagine you start off like this morning, I had 2 eggs and about 3 ounces of tuna fish, and then I had banana with some peanut butter, very exciting. But you know that if I didn't have that protein, I would never function or be mentally clear and I'd be craving and hungry. When I get that protein, then I can last till lunch. My breakfast is at 7:15. I don't eat lunch till 12:30, 1, and I'm okay. I'm not hungry or irritable. So it makes a big difference when you're balancing your hormones. You've got to eat with your cycles and find your own carb tolerance. You may tolerate more in the beginning of your cycle, less in the end, or you may find as your period approaches, you do need a little more carbs to get your sleepy, relaxed serotonin and dopamine up, especially at night.
Yeah. One thing that I found for me was that when I started eating breakfast, things got better, which is crazy because fasting is such a big trend now and everybody's, oh, just fast as long as possible, fast weeks. And I found the opposite. The more I eat earlier in the day, actually, and stop eating maybe around 7 or so, the better I feel.
Yeah. And bear in mind too, and this I talk about in Cave Women too, I have a section on intermittent fasting. Of the 73 studies I look at, only 13 were done on women. Okay. Women are far more sensitive to the effects of fasting. If you have a thyroid condition or your adrenals are weak, your cortisol curve is shot, by all means, do not fast. You will do more harm than good. And women should not do prolonged fast for more than 5 to 7 days. Now, if you want to do a gentle fast, like a 12-hour fast, where your dinner finishes at 7 and you don't have breakfast till 7 in the morning, that is usually well tolerated by most people and is enough to facilitate weight loss. But you don't need to fast 16 hours a day, or even 14 hours a day can be detrimental to a lot of people. So it really depends on you, where you are in your cycle. Now, the population I work with the most who has the best success in fasting are women who are done with menopause, because you're not getting the monthly fluctuations in your hormones. So things are leveled off. And especially if you're doing hormone replacement, your hormone intake is going to be the same every day.
Yeah, I did hear that a lot of the studies that were done on men and postmenopausal women. Yeah, so
exactly. So listen to your body, people. Your body keeps the score. It's wise beyond measure. So if you feel shaky and irritable and you have to eat, then intermittent fasting is not for you. It's just that simple. And there are plenty of other ways to skin a cat. There really are.
You mentioned shaky and irritable. So what are some foods that you can eat or try to eat and see if they don't make you shaky and irritable after, so people don't go up and down all day?
Yeah. As I mentioned, just optimizing your protein intake is really key. getting good quality fats, again, because protein and fats really sustain your blood sugar and have zero to no impact on your insulin levels. You may find, again, you have to find your own unique carb tolerance. You may be somebody who likes and needs a couple bites of starch at every meal to sustain your blood sugar. Protein and carbs and veggies may not be enough for you. Or you may find you really do far better on a very low carb diet where your carbs are primarily from vegetables and a piece of fruit here and there. So it's really unique as to the recommendation. So ultimately, it's each of our responsibility. Take a little time, be your own diet detective, experiment. Like, do I need carbs at any meal? Do I need it at one meal? If so, what meal is that? Is it closer to the time of my workout or is it closer to the time in my bed? Or do I need a little at every meal or do I only have at breakfast, fruit at breakfast and rice or potatoes at dinner? Because if I have a carb at lunch, I'm sleepy after work. So or sleepy in the afternoon while I'm working. So it really depends on, again, your own unique biochemistry.
And how long on average does it take to balance hormones once somebody commits to the diet, the lifestyle changes, maybe the supplements and all that?
Yeah, I really try to manage people and tell them it's a minimum of 3 to 6 months. If you have PCOS and you're not getting your period regularly, it can take longer to bring back a period. But fortunately, I have found with many of my clients, and this is pretty funny, it brings it back unexpectedly quickly, even when we just shift the diet. And so I had a client, Deanna, who was told she could never have children. Her boyfriend broke up with her. It was actually really heartbreaking. And she hadn't gotten her period for 9 years prior. And within a month of working together and shifting her diet, she got her period. So we just were like laughing hysterically because she was told by her doctor, you're fully menopausal. And she wasn't actually menopausal. She was not. And we did her Dutch test and she wasn't menopausal. She just had a lot of imbalances and was overweight and had a lot of insulin management issues. Again, I had another client who came to me for fertility. She was not getting pregnant. She was like, let me just see what happens when we switched her diet. We switched her diet and she was a very picky eater and had a very limited repertoire of food. So I started just adding a few foods in and within 6 weeks, she was pregnant. So it depends on your body, but I say give a minimum of 3 to 6 months, especially the longer you've had a problem, the longer it will take, but we do get there. And in women who are postmenopausal, once you put people on hormone replacement, that's relatively quick because it's a controlled experiment. You're not getting a monthly cycle. So you're just, you know, refilling the tank. So I see a much quicker turnaround. And so women who are going from night sweats and insomnia and hot flashes, moody irritability and vaginal dryness to sleeping, like within a couple days to a week, sleeping, the brain fog clears, the moodiness resolves, of course, because you're sleeping. The hot flashes decrease significantly. There's vaginal moisture. I also use inserts, estriol inserts. There's so much you can do. And then for menstruating women, I'll pull out my biggest guns. Obviously, a really amazing diet, supplements as needed, sometimes some topical progesterone as needed. And we just hit the and it's really restoring the monthly cycle. If a woman is young and menstruating, but having 21-day cycles, we elongate them so that they spread out to a 28-day cycle. Or a woman who's not menstruating, we bring her cycle back every month.
How can everyone learn from you and work with you? Tell us about your books and your practice.
Yeah. So I have 4 books out. The first 3 are my pink Bibles, Eat, Drink, and Be Gorgeous. The motto is, your body may be a temple, but who says it can't be a nightclub? So this is great for the girl in her 20s who's really trying to just find balance and get healthy and be able to have a martini at night and some wheatgrass by day. And what are the good supplements? What food does she need to eat? What supplements can she take to balance out her hormones, her energy? There's a a lot about sexual health in there as well, which is really fun to write about. And then the other books 2 and 3 are offshoots of that. There's meal plans. There's, again, different supplement protocols. There's food logs in them. Cave Women Don't Get Fat is my paleo diet book for women, as I mentioned. So if people want to work with me, definitely. So for 5 of your listeners, Kat, I actually have opened up my calendar for a 30-minute consultation. This is to help you solve a specific problem where you come away with 3 customized strategies. So if you're trying to lose weight, you're trying to balance your hormones, you're trying to fix your gut, definitely go to estherblum.com/call, C-A-L-L. You can also, while you're on my website, Esther Blum, you can download, I have a 3-part free video training series called Crush Your Cravings. So you can download that. I'm on Instagram at Gorgeous Esther. I'm on YouTube at Esther Blum. So there's a lot of information I try to give and produce and share with you all so you become educated and empowered when it comes to your own health.
So before we go, is there anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with? Any other little tips or tricks?
Just understanding that there is nothing in you that cannot be healed. I always say with the exception of type 1 diabetes and amputations. Surgical procedures I cannot reverse. Okay. But for the most part, if you're having imbalances, know that there are answers for you. And if your doctor isn't listening, find a new doctor. Find a functional medicine practitioner. Find a dietitian, an integrative dietitian like me. Find someone who is going to run tests, who's going to look deeper under the hood, who's going to get to the root cause of your problem. Because I guarantee you, your PMS is not a birth control deficiency. It's a nutrient deficiency. It's an imbalance in your life, in your stress, your lifestyle, poor diet, poor nutrient absorption, or gut inflammation. You fix those things, your PMS is going to resolve. So the answers are inside of you. So there are answers on the outside to help you unearth that wisdom in your body.
Esther, thank you so much for your time. And I will put all of that in the show notes so everyone can go and check you out.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, K-A-T-1-5, for 15% off any of their single pack products. And definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it. Thank you for listening to the show. Please show your support for the podcast by leaving a 5-star review. Learn more about the show and what I have to offer you at katkatibi.com. Consider being a part of the new Patreon, where episodes are ad-free and you'll find extra bonus content. Send a voicemail question or email me. Check the show notes for more information. This podcast is for informational merrymaking and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including KatKatibi, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.